February 18, 2011, eight Koreans who are with the Socialist Workers League of Korea, a revolutionary socialist group in that country, are to face sentencing of 5 to 7 years for nothing more than their beliefs, including advocacy for working-class revolution in both Koreas and their support for several strikes and movements going back to 2007. The piece you are about to hear presents the context around the trial, highlighting some hugely significant offense for the working class in Korea. The Candlelight Movement in response to U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement, the Ssangyong Motor Strike and Factory Occupation in 2007, and the Ilan Department Store Strike. But the running themes throughout the piece are issues that affect workers throughout the world, including here in Canada. State repression against those calling for social change in the interests of the working class. How rank-and-file workers' needs and desires go beyond what can be achieved through trade unions that are entrenched with the state. Tensions between precarious workers and more privileged ones, and the importance of international solidarity between workers at an international level. Coming up, we have the voices of Oh Min-gyu, one of the members of the Socialist Workers League of Korea who faces sentencing on February the 18th, Oh Si-cho, another member of the League facing sentencing, as well as a former chairman of the League's Central Committee and professor emeritus of Yonsei University, Lauren Goldner, writer and activist based in New York who has spent significant time in Korea, and Mi Park, professor of sociology and social anthropology at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Okay. I'm Lauren Goldner. I'm a political activist and writer. I spent most of the years 2005-2009 in South Korea, where I became very involved with the radical wing of the South Korean labor movement, and that's how I got involved with this case of the persecution of the Sanoryon group, the Socialist Workers Alliance of South Korea. Most immediately, they're facing sentencing on February 18th for charges under the Korean national security law and probably are going to get between 5 and 7 years in prison. This repression is most immediately linked to their involvement in the so-called Candlelight Movement of spring and summer 2008. A very big strike at a department store chain called Eland in 2007-2008, and also their involvement in the occupation of the Ssangyong Motor Company factory for 77 days from April till July of 2009. The unusual twist in the case is that they are not accused of any crimes committed in those actions. They are being indicted under this big national security law, essentially for being socialists and Marxists. They have made it into a kind of battle against thought control.
My name is Oh Min-gyu, and I'm working for Socialist Workers League of Korea as the secretary, and I'm one of the founding member of SWLK, and was arrested in August 2008 with another 7 members for violating national security law. But contrary to Korean government's expectations, the court disapproved warrants of all arrested activists, including myself. In November 2008, prosecutors reissued arrest warrants, which was disapproved again by the court. But they never gave up. And after 1 year's further investigations, they charged us unarrested, and the trial has been going on over a year.
Introducing Oh Si-cho.
We think this is a political trial in the following methods. First, the fact that South Korea's own courts have twice thrown out the police charges towards us. Second, the fact that we are charged with forming a group benefiting the enemy, that is North Korea, despite the fact we declared that the capitalist North Korean state has absolutely nothing to do with the working class or communism, and is nothing but the most extreme version of decadent capitalism's general tendency towards militaristic barbarism. We are accused of nothing other than the thought crime of being socialists. The sentences required by the prosecution are only one more example of the repression meted out by the South Korean ruling class against those who are standing in its way. Faced with the prospect of heavy jail sentences, we have conducted ourselves in court with exemplary dignity and used the opportunity to expose clearly the political nature of this trial. Four militants, including me, face 7 years in prison, while four others are facing 5 years. Sentencing date will be on the 18th of February this year. Volumes of documents for indictment of prosecution are over 30,000 pages, and the period after indictment is almost 8 months. Even if the sentencing would be heavy, we will fight for innocence, abolition of national security law, and consistent practice of revolutionary socialism.
Oh, Mingyu.
Almost every evidence that prosecutors submitted to the court to prove us guilty comes from the newspapers and political statements which we publish and publicize also in our websites. Some are really private emails that prosecutors have found from hundreds of thousands of email lists through the search warrant. Printed pages of evidence exceeds 40,000 of A4 papers, and prosecutors and police have traced us, taken pictures of us in the demonstrations and political sessions, read our private email letters, and supervised our cell phone records over 2 years. The court held more than 30 public trials in which we defendants had fought political battles with prosecutors. And prosecutors called more than 20 witnesses to the court who proved to be useless for this trial. As the trial has been going on to the final sentence, our belief that we are innocent has been growing. It's not just our belief, because many forces and groups have supported our struggle against the Korean government. And we have also heard that international solidarity is being constructed. And I'd like to take this interview to appreciate everyone around the world who has tried to build a movement to protest Korean government for our case. We defendants have asserted in the last statement to the court, whether we are imprisoned or not, Korean government cannot prohibit socialist workers from growing, because it is capitalism itself, not the socialist, which has led workers to socialism every day and every workplace. And capitalist system is not very solid without suppression of a workers' struggle. The exact name is Socialist Workers League of Korea, SWLK, its abbreviated form. SWLK is founded in February 2008 as a consolidated revolutionary force, which consists of several revolutionary socialist groups in Korea. We are the revolutionary forces that declare world proletarian revolution publicly and express the determination to struggle with the proletariat of the world, including Korea. We are revolutionary socialists who believe capitalist system can only be maintained with the extraction of surplus value through relentless exploitation and repression over the workers. And it has an irreversible fate to be transformed into socialism only through workers' revolution. We believe Paris Commune and Russian Revolution have taken magnificent steps in human history, but workers' struggle for socialism faced a stumbling block by the defeat of world revolution of the 1920s and the counter-revolution of Stalinism in the 1930s. We do not regard Soviet Union after 1930s as the socialist state, and neither do we regard Stalinist state in Eastern Europe, China, Cuba, Vietnam, and North Korea as the socialist state. These states were just another kind of capitalist state, which means they never stopped exploitation and repression over the working class. We believe and wish these regimes should be overthrown by true working class revolutions. We have focused on organizing militant workers to construct revolutionary party. We believe revolutionary force should have their root in workplace, where ordinary workers are exploited by capitalists, making ties with other comrade workers, and having day-by-day conflict with the capitalist. We have printed and distributed our political newspaper, and we also have tried to make workplace bulletins printed every fortnight in the workplace. And we also have tried to involve ourselves in worker struggles and many strikes.
Mi Park discussing neoliberalism and the casualization of the Korean workforce.
In my opinion, neoliberalism is about removing the barrier to the movement of capital, removing government restrictions and regulations on various things, privatization and liberalization, open market, and so on and so forth. Changes to the labor laws in a flexible manner so that the capital doesn't have to deal with organized labor force when capital decides that it's going to lay off workers or it's going to hire and fire workers without obligation or responsibility for looking after employed people. So this, the flexible labor market, flexible labor law, were introduced not only by the Lee administration, also by its predecessor, the previous regimes, starting from early 1990s. Economically, Korean labor market became so fragmented in the sense that there are less full-time workers who would join the unions, and you have more part-time subcontracted workers who are less likely to join the union. So the trade unions lost membership in general. In my opinion, I think that structural economic factor, the economic restructuring fundamentally undermined the objective condition of the labor movement in general in Korea. The divide or the schism within the labor movement, the divide between full-time regular workers on one hand and the irregular workers on the other. Trade unions became, in a way, that vehicle to protect the interests of the already privileged workers, full-time regular workers, and they are reluctant to support the part-time subcontracted workers who are less organized and more vulnerable. Given lack of solidarity between the two, I mean, it's the workers are very subject to, let's say, the management pressure to give in when there is a demand from management to for mass layoff or changes to employment conditions and so on and so forth. So this divide between regular workers and the irregular workers, the internal divide, I think that undermines the labor movement. And there are many examples in since 2008 that the conflict and tension between the two, and also the trade union is the more militant wing of the labor movement, which is Korean Confederation of a Trade Union, KCTU, previously known for its militancy and uncompromising stance on many issues, but many analysts observed that KCTU became increasingly bureaucratic and subscribed to bread and butter unionism and more focus on protecting the existing workers, union members. There are many signs that the fragmented labor force, not all, but the conservative wings came under existing pressure from the management and the government. So they try to disaffiliate from the organized labor force. So there are signs that some unions already disaffiliated, like a SsangYong Motor Company. The trade union at SsangYong Motor Company is a case in point. It voted to disaffiliate from the kind of militant metal trade union, which previously it belonged to. So my observation is that the trade union movement in Korea since 2008 has not been doing well, despite many cases of militancy and resistance from the rank-and-file workers resisting neoliberal economic restructuring measures.
Lauren Goldner discusses the ELAN department store strike.
The first one was the ELAN strike. ELAN involved about 110 department stores scattered around South Korea, a number of them, of course, in Seoul. And it involved the casual workers who were employed by ELAN. I should explain that one very important aspect of class struggle in South Korea, going back more than 10 years, really to probably the mid-90s, involves the accelerated casualization of the workforce. At this point, it's easily more than 50% of all workers in South Korea are on 90-day contracts. If they're on any contract at all, they're subject to being fired at any time for no reason. They get little or no benefits, and they have been growing rapidly in numbers, of course, as a way of undermining the remaining minority of regular workers who have fixed contracts, who are rather expensive to lay off. Under the previous government of a left-of-center politician named Noh Moon-young, who had been a labor lawyer of the movement before going directly into politics, a kind of Orwellian law was passed with the name, roughly, Casual Workers Protection Law. And this law required employers to give full regular status to anyone who worked for their firm for 2 years or more. And the upshot of this law, instead of protecting the casual workers, was that most of the employers just simply, at the end of the second year approach, fired casual workers and hired new ones. So this was happening or about to happen at ELAN in the summer of 2007, and some very militant, mainly women employees at UN went on strike, occupied a number of the department stores, were attacked and beaten up by both company thugs as well as the police. And they actually held on for about 13 months into the summer of 2008. But in the course of that time, the strike kind of fizzled, and ultimately a lot of people, of course, being poor and living paycheck to paycheck, had to go off and get other jobs. And so it was essentially a defeat. So that was ELAN. But one important thing about ELAN was that it did attract a lot of support from outside. This is, I mean, that is from people not directly employed by ELAN or on the strike. This is another important factor in labor relations, so to speak, in South Korea, that the question of getting these struggles out of isolation and bringing in workers, most of them casual workers or unemployed workers from elsewhere, has been sort of the main strategy. The other strategy has been to actually try to organize with the regular workers, which has been difficult, although in November of last year, there was a factory occupation in Hyundai Motor Company in Ulsan, the big industrial center in the southeastern part of the peninsula, of basically casual workers demanding to be instated as full-time regular workers, and it had at least the tacit support of the regular workers. In some other cases, the regular workers just attacked the casual workers. This has actually happened in a couple of wildcat strikes by casual. So it's a rocky business, and overcoming that gulf between casual and regular workers is probably the biggest single question in the South Korean working class.
Lauren Goldner discusses SWLK's activities during the ELAN strike.
They participated in the sit-in, they walked picket lines and tried to organize outside support. And worked with some parts of the union, but they were basically just trying everything they could to shut the stores down, spread the support for the strike, and spread awareness of the strike.
Oh Min-kyu discusses the SWLK's role in the strikes since 2007.
And there have been very significant strikes in Korea since 2007. To name a few, ELAN retailer workers strike in 2007, and Ssangyong Motor workers strike in 2009, and Hyundai Motor precarious workers strike in 2010. These three strikes were all started and carried out in the form of sit-in strike occupying their workplace. SWLK's activity in these strikes was not much different from other socialist groups in Korea. We supported these strikes, tried to build solidarity with sit-in unionists, appealed sympathy strike to all workers in other factories, and fought against governments and capitalist attack. We focused on rank-and-file unionists because it was them, not the union leaders, who had played a decisive role in sit-in strikes. We have tried to discuss the prospect of these strikes with many workers and introduce strike stories to other workers through our political newspapers and workplace bulletins. There are some progressive parties in Korea, Korean Democratic Labor Party and New Progressive Party, but they have, we think, opportunist and parliamentarist policies. Of course, they have also supported these strikes, in bureaucratic way, an opportunist way. They always demanded union leaders to make concessions for negotiation with capitalists. As the union bureaucrats have the same policy with these progressive parties. A lot of worker struggles couldn't go their way straightforward. So SWLK has fought against union bureaucrats and opportunist parties in the middle of worker struggle. We have argued strikers should build their true leadership, alternative leadership, against union bureaucrats and opportunist leadership. And we believe this is the right way to build a revolutionary socialist party in Korea.
Lauren Goldner discusses the Ssangyong factory occupation.
The Ssangyong strike was a kind of different situation. It was a single auto plant and a relatively small one. It's actually an auto parts plant. It had gone through a process of sort of whittling down the permanent employees. I think it started with 8,000. By the time the strike began, it was down to 6,000. And then suddenly in the spring of 2009, the company announced it was going to lay off 2,000 workers, and which led to an almost immediate occupation of the plant by those people who were slated to be laid off, but not only by them. So it essentially very quickly became a siege of one factory. The occupation went on for 77 days. In the course of it, the government and the company cut off water, cut off delivery of food, cut off, and finally even cut off electricity, even though that endangered the paint department of the factory, which could easily have caught fire. And that was in the very last days before the final police and army attack. It was a much more dramatic kind of escalation. And a lot of people thought that, you know, these workers had a pretty good deal and everybody else is getting rolled back. So again, there was a real problem of getting any wide support from the outside, workers from nearby factories. The Ssangyong plant is in a city called Pyeongtaek, which is basically a distant suburb of Seoul. And workers from nearby factories did come and fought the police and helped defend the plant and helped, you know, basically shut down the gates, tried to deliver food and water after they were cut off. But nevertheless, it remained relatively isolated. The mainstream Union Federation, the KCTU, Korean Confederation of Trade Unions, in its usual posture, you know, issued a series of fine phrases about helping out, but in fact did very little. And the specific union, the Metal Workers Union, at least on the national level, didn't do much more. There are some people from the union local, including the local president, stayed in the factory right up to the end. And you know, even though some of them were not even scheduled to be laid off. So the Ssangyong Socialist Worker Alliance, again, threw itself into the struggle and generally publicized it to the rest of the working class, you know, to the extent that it could with its limited resources. So I think that it's very militant activity, despite its small numbers, is what kind of caught the attention of the government, that there are much larger left-wing groups in South Korea of different kinds. For the government to just reach over them and crack down on a group of 50 or 80 members is really quite extraordinary.
Mi Park on the Ssangyong factory occupation.
The union decided to go on a strike and especially occupy the company facilities and ways a sit-in protest. And you probably know lasted 77 days, and that is a very militant, brave, and it was epic struggle. And it again, it shows that when I say that labor movement has not been doing well, I don't mean that they lack militancy, they lack resolve to fight back. The Ssangyong strike shows that they could hold on to 77 days until the strike was violently broken down and by the riot police, and many union leaders were arrested and stayed in jail, and But despite the militancy, I think we have to look at also the outcome. And the outcome is that, obviously, the strike shows high degree of militancy on the part of the ordinary workers. But on the other hand, there's a significant number of workers who are really, really worried about protecting their job. And they are not in position to look out for others, the less fortunate ones. And this, in a way, revealed in the subsequent aftermath of the end of the strike is that the negotiation itself, one can say that, of course, the union got something because the management agreed to reduce the number of laid-off workers and gave more options for the laid-off workers. So the people who got laid off, they have choice of various things, transfer to sales position or voluntary resignation and whatnot. So they gave more options to those who are going to be laid off. But this partial, it wasn't even victory, but it is a partial gain, was in a way obliterated by the media talked about how this, because of the strike, the company, you know, lost so much money and filed bankruptcy, and now it's it will wait to be sold to a new owner and so on and so forth. And the media blaming on striking workers and the trade union lacking overall a vision for, let's say, alternatives to neoliberal restructuring, not only the company restructuring at SsangYong Motor Company, but overall vision of alternatives to global neoliberal restructuring. I would say an outcome is either the radical wings would be jailed and the remaining ones would be very pessimistic about what they can achieve.
Lauren Goldner on the Candlelight Movement in Korea.
The Candlelight Movement, it was a movement set off by the announcement of the proposed free trade agreement between Korea and the United States. And somehow, for reasons I never completely understood, the showing of a documentary about the condition of meat processing, cattle raising in the United States just sent a shockwave through part of the Korean population. And very quickly, the idea was that this was going to be the importation of mad cow disease. Well, of course, it touched a very nationalist nerve, and also the whole question of what's left of Korean agriculture was on the line, because the Korean agricultural population, under the impact of industrialization, has probably been reduced to 8 to 10% of the population, whereas starting in the 1950s, it was still the majority. So the movement began with some high school girls using text messaging. They really got it going. And the word just spread like wildfires through initially the high schools, and then led to mobilizations in the streets that involved a fair number of university students. So at its peak on sometime in June of 2008, there were a million people on the streets in demonstrations, not just in Seoul, but in a number of other cities. And they really shocked the government, both in the magnitude of the protest, the new hard right government, the current government of Lee Myung-bak and the Grand National Party, which is the most important hard-right conservative party in South Korea, had just come to power a few months before, and they found themselves very flat-footed in face of this mass mobilization, which by and large they just simply waited out. And then after the demonstrations had died down, with no resolution. As you know, the Korean-American Free Trade Agreement still has not been approved. It was after that, of course, that the repression began. That was the first arrest of the SsangYong militants. That was in August of 2008. and the charges against them were simply thrown out by the judge. And then there was a second arrest in the fall of 2009 following the Ssangyong strike. Again, the charges were thrown out. And then finally, this time, the charges stuck. And their trial began, I believe, last July and went on for several months. And that's as what has kind of led to the current situation where the prosecutor or district attorney has asked for 5 years for about half of the group of eight and 7 years for the other half.
Oh Ming-kyu discusses state repression against the SWLK and the national security law.
I'd like to introduce three kind of ruling class argument on some important situations of our case. First, why did government, Korean government, decide to arrest SWLK activities in August 2008? Did that moment means something to Lee Myung-bak government? Yes, it did, we think so. Starting in May 2008, from a small group of high school students, candle rally in Korea, against the Korean-U.S. free trade agreement, especially some group of high school students were afraid of mad cow disease. And the candle rally in Korea culminated in June and July 2008, involving hundreds of thousands of people into the street demonstration every day, almost declaring end to this regime. In August, right after our arrest, Korean government announced SWLK was one of the main force which masterminded these huge demonstrations in 2008 summer. Undoubtedly, it was an absolute lie. We were just one of tremendous forces participating in candle rally. If there had been any difference between socialist groups, including SWLK and other groups, that would be one thing. We appeal to workers to organize political strikes against Korean-U.S. FTA and many other labor-killing government policies, not only in the rally, but also in the workplaces. Second, after they failed to get arrest warrants of SWLK members twice, prosecutors decided to charge us unarrested in August 2009. What happened at that time? Ssangyong motor workers had carried their 77-day sit-in strike, which was stopped by harsh police suppressions on August 7th. The day prosecutors decided to charge us was August 11th, that is, right after sit-in strikes end. The day they charged us on August 11th, prosecutor's office released to the press that SWLK was the main force which made Ssangyong workers' strike more militant. And they also argued that SWLK masterminded these Ssangyong struggles. Again, we were not the only force which supported this strike and tried to construct solidarity. And it is not surprising. Prosecutors suggested almost little evidence about Ssangyong workers' strike to the court. The third, in the opening statement of this trial, prosecutors made a very symbolic comment like this. Definitely, SWLK is a small group, but it is really critical to declare not guilty to them only because they are a small size of group, especially in this neoliberalism era. It is not impossible for a small group such as SWLK to get much support from people and form a threatening force which might overthrow our capitalist system. I just translate prosecutor's saying into English. Do I need any further explanations about why Korean government repressed SWLK? Undoubtedly, we are organizing a small group of workers. But SWLK case is only a first example. If we are found to be guilty in the forthcoming trial, many other socialist groups and labor militants will be the next. National security law would be used in more wide range to suppress the opponents to Korean government and capitalists. National security law is playing a crucial role in this trial. Korean constitution declares the freedom of ideology, but national security law is denying that them. It is often said that in Korea that national security law stands above Korean constitution. Prosecutors also charged us for participating in some anti-government demonstrations, mainly the candle rally. But it is really small part of this trial compared to the main dispute about national security law. Prosecutors demanded only $500 fine for each defendant to the judge for violating the law on assembly and demonstration. In terms of violating national security law, they demanded 5 to 7 year imprisonment sentence to the judge. Many people were shocked at the prosecutor's demand because 7 year imprisonment is the maximum sentence on violating Article 7 of national security law. Let me introduce Article 7 of national security law. Korean government and prosecutors argued we had benefited enemy state, which means, of course, North Korea. It sounds really odd because I said SWLK opposes North Korean regime. Here lies the secret of national security law. Korean government has argued to international society that this law's main aim is to guard from the military threat from North Korea. But this law originated from anti-communist law born in 1948, the name of which was changed into national security law in 1960s. National security law is descendant of anti-communist law. Through national security law, Korean government have suppressed not only the activists who support and have close tie with North Korean regime, but also socialists who insist that North Korean regime should be overthrown by North Korean workers' revolution. That is one of the reasons why many international human rights groups, including Amnesty International, have demanded to Korean government to abolish this law.
Lauren Goldner discusses SWLK repression.
And I think even on an international level, if we consider Korea as one of the advanced industrial capitalist countries, I'm hard-pressed to think of any case involving labor activity, strike support, and so on that has brought down that level of repression. People get arrested, they go to jail for relatively short periods of time, but this is really something kind of off the charts in terms of recent history that I'm aware of. The national security law is a very draconian law on the books that has been on the books in South Korea since 1948, that is just before the Korean War, and theoretically still carries the death penalty for quote-unquote pro-North Korean activities. It's kind of ironic, and it was sort of stumped the police and the prosecutors when they discovered that the Sanoyon group actually is in favor of working-class revolution in both Koreas. So it's very hard to portray them as being a pro-North group, but that, of course, doesn't stop the repression steamroller of this current hard-right government. I remember cases of online booksellers being prosecuted or threatened with prosecution for selling books that were considered favorable to North Korea. I don't know the outcome of them, but nothing on the scale. In the post-1998 IMF crisis atmosphere, which brought two left-of-center politicians to power as presidents of South Korea, Kim Dae-jung and then Noh Moon-hyun, there just wasn't the atmosphere for that kind of hard repression. So one would probably have to go back to the early 90s to find anything comparable. What is very curious about the current climate in South Korea is that the government, with its beating of the war drums against the North and the episodes of the last 8 or 10 months, the sinking of the Korean destroyer last spring, and then the shelling of the island right on the maritime border between North and South Korea that killed 4 people a couple months ago. It's quite remarkable that about 60% of the South Korean population doesn't believe anything about the government's explanations of these events. And last June, after the sinking, you know, very shortly after the sinking of the destroyer, a moderate opposition party actually got 60% of the votes in some regional elections. So I would say that the attempt to lock up the Sanoryon defendants is probably part of a strategy to, again, as in the case of the Sanoryon strike or as in the case of the ELAM strike, to sort of demonstrate that organized militant opposition doesn't pay and that, on the contrary, it leads to very serious consequences. It should be also mentioned that South Korea has some unbelievable laws for the repression of labor activities above and beyond sending people to jail. Under the current laws, a striker can be personally held responsible financially for losses to a company during a strike, so that even after going after the union and its assets, in some cases, the government and the employers have been able to simply attach the apartment, the cars, and the bank accounts of labor activists and just leave them essentially totally destitute. So it gives you some idea of the potential risks that are involved in being seriously involved in hard left politics there. So I would say that it's a, from the government's point of view, it's a kind of a touch and go thing. They can't be unaware that there's a lot of opposition, not particularly strident, to their government, which now it's concluding its third year in power. And so I think there's some sense of a kind of, just lashing out.
In conclusion, we return to the story of the trial and the importance of international working class solidarity. Two of the voices that you heard, Oh Min-kyu and Oh Si-cho, are amongst the 8 members of the Socialist Workers League facing sentencing of 5 to 7 years on February the 18th for what were aptly described as thought crimes, their beliefs in working class revolution in both Koreas and beyond. Their original sentencing date was January 27th, and it is believed that the barrage of messages of international solidarity their lawyer received helped push the date further away. Prosecutors have attempted to indict members of the League several times since 2008, and prior to December, the prosecutor's case was thrown out of court each time. It is not impossible that a barrage of email protests to Judge Hyung Do Kim of the Seoul Central District Court will help reduce or eliminate the pending sentences altogether. Let Judge Kim know your feelings in your own words about this crackdown on thought crime by writing to swlk@jinbo.net.